Hello, friend. Happy New Year, and welcome back to another episode of the Shanti Ma Podcast. This is episode 17. Today, I sit down and catch up with my good old friend, Sonia Ringo. Except she is not old, she's young and quite lovely. Sonia Ringo is a poet, world traveler, artist, forager, creature, singer, and songwriter. She has lived on four different continents and spent time in over 20 countries, writing poems and playing her guitar all the way around the globe. In 2015, she created a jewelry line using feathers and animal bones, which she collected during her backpacking adventures. Sonia's newest creative endeavor combines original poetry with homemade paper and wild foraged botanical inks. Her various artistic mediums all share one unwavering theme: celebration of and reverence for nature. She is currently working on her first collection of poems, which will be available for purchase in the spring of 2021. In this episode, we catch up and share some travel stories, lost years, and then dive into some social media dieting and why it's good for you. Sonia shares her experience, insights, and the positive impact that this break had on her mental health, creativity, and productivity. She even managed to write and complete a book during this time. It's something I've been personally considering for similar reasons. Social media is a gaping hole that will steal your mind and soul if you let it. But most importantly, because I too have a book to complete. I hope you enjoy today's episode. And if you do, it would pleaseth me if you would subscribe so that you can stay up to date with my latest episodes. And if you really get a lot out of this episode, please share and or leave a review. Your reviews on Apple especially make a difference and help this show to grow. You can also become a member on my dusty old Patreon at patreon.com/Shantima. Three, two, one. Sonia Ringo, welcome to my podcast.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited.
I know. We were about to start talking about all this good stuff, and we're like, okay, we better just hit record here.
We should probably start recording.
Definitely. I was just going to say, the last time I think I saw you, I feel like that was before I went to Ecuador. Remember when I locked my keys in my car at like 5 o'clock in the morning?
I forgot about that. Oh my gosh. That was forever ago. We were both about to embark on like big, amazing journeys and have had so many since, but like haven't caught up since then. It's crazy. I know.
So finally we're like, okay, let's do a podcast. So you guys are in for a treat. You get to hear us catch up a bit here first.
Yeah. So many adventures.
Yeah. Well, I know, because I remember that was weird. That was like a phase of my life where I locked my keys in my car. Oh my God. Like 5 or 6 times, I feel like, that year, or like over, oh, I mean the dark times. Yeah.
It was because you had that weird Forevermore claw in your car. I think it was like bringing you bad luck.
Oh my God. I forgot that about fine. That. Yeah. That's so funny. I can't remember why I took that from Jeff. That.
I think you were just being a little stinker. You're being a little troll.
Oh yeah, I remember what it was. Was because him and Chris asked if I could drive them to the airport and then take Jeff's car back, and right. He wouldn't give me back my. Okay, you guys are in for an incredible. You get to hear the depths of my maturity here. He stole my clown, my toy clown.
Yeah, that was why
the wind up, and I decided that like I wanted it back, and him and Chris were taunting me. Like I remember one time, like
totally riling you up.
Yeah, like they were throwing it back and forth. One was standing on the roof, and so anyway, so when I drove them to the airport, I was like, I'm taking this claw,
And then it was like the whole thing. Yeah. So maybe that's why I had bad luck. That creepy.
I love this story because we're all fully adults at this time. All of us.
I know it sounds full grown adults.
So I stole their claw.
Oh my gosh. Okay. And then you have been all over the world since then. Like, where have you been? What have you been up to? You've traveled a ton. Gosh.
It's been just the best. It's been the best. Yeah. I think so. The last time I saw you was before my big Asia trip, I believe.
Yeah, I think where so.
I was gone for like a year. The first half was with my best friend, Morgan, and the second half was solo. But yeah, that was the big trip I was saving for when I first got to Calgary.
Right.
Saved up 20 grand and just went as long as I could, lasted a year. And yeah, it was, I went to every country in Southeast Asia except Timor-Leste. I don't know if I'm saying it right. Timor-Leste. It's like this tiny country south of Indonesia. So that's the only country I didn't hit up in Southeast Asia, but I would love to go there.
Oh my God, that sounds amazing. I know I've always wanted to go back to Southeast Asia because I only did Thailand and Indonesia, but you really do need a lot of time to travel and see a place properly. Otherwise, you're just kind of like racing through. You don't get a vibe. You only get the tourist experience.
Exactly, which is like, it's just not really worth it for me. Like, I want to like dive in and really dig in. I feel like you only start to like really feel and like understand a country after a month, like minimum.
Oh yeah.
So that's kind of what we were trying to do, was a month in each country and some places more. Like, I think we ended up in Thailand for a few months, like back and forth kind of, because it's usually a 30-day visa. But yeah, I love Asia so much. So after that trip, ran out of money, came back to save and do it again. I actually went back to Asia. I was going to go to South and Central America, but I was like, I just have to go back to Asia. Like, I love it so much. So went back there. I think that was like 4 or 5 months for the second trip.
Oh my God. Yeah, I know. That's the traveler's dilemma. You go and you come back and you're like, oh my God, I need to go again.
Right? I'm like, there's so many other places, but also there was so many places in Asia I didn't get to go to, like Borneo, for example. That's where I went on the second time. Cause yeah, I mean, you can just never fully see a whole country or continent, you know, it's never ending.
Yeah, that's so true. What was your favorite country?
I think Myanmar was like a super unique experience. It was like the one country that was completely different than all the rest. Like, every country in Southeast Asia has its own unique stuff going on, but Myanmar was just like, oh my God, this place is super different. And it actually felt like traveling back in time. Like, there'd be just like these horse-drawn buggies, like so many things done manually, and like pretty much no one speaking English. It was very raw. And even with the language barrier, people were just like so hospitable. It was, so many times I like cried from how loving and kind these people were. Like, when I was super sick, I was sick for 3 days on a trek. I had like terrible food poisoning, but there was no car or like road that I could get taken off the track. So I actually had to keep walking for 3 days with food poisoning.
Oh my God.
So I was pretty messed up. And my guide was super nice about it, but like, they don't have modern like medication or anything. So they were giving me like unripe bananas that were like roasted on a fire and stuff like that. And like, nothing was helping. So yeah, I finally made it to the end of the track, and this man offered me his bed because he could tell I just looked really messed up. So he like leads me up this like rickety little shack kind of building, and he doesn't speak English at all, and just like points at his bed, and it's just like this thin mat on the bamboo floor. And I slept for hours. I woke up and it was nighttime, and he could just see that I like needed to rest, and like offered me everything he had, which was so nice.
Oh
Yeah. People are like that there. It's just so heartwarming.
And they had their borders closed for, I think, years, didn't they? Like nobody was allowed to come in. When did they open the borders again?
I forget. So I went there in 2015, and I think it was only like a couple years before that it had opened. Mm-hmm. So they were still like very not used to seeing tourists. So it was like, you do get stared at a lot, but always like with smiles and yeah, it's still very new for them. And I'm not sure now if, I guess now the borders are probably closed everywhere.
Yeah. I thought that they were going to close the borders again. I thought I had heard.
A lot of unrest there. Mm. And yeah, I think that time I was in Asia there, it just happened to be this window where it was like a little bit more safe to go. Still a lot of unrest in certain areas though.
And did you feel any of that when you were there at all? Like what kind of unrest? I'm totally
not at all.
Burma. It used to be called Burma, right? And now it's Myanmar. Okay.
Yeah. Burma, now Myanmar. So there's just like a lot of, there's civil war kind of always happening, like fights between different religious groups. They're just kind of constantly battling each other.
Can't we all just get along?
I know. It's like the story as old as time. Kind of everywhere on earth, just some places a little more intense.
It's so true. Okay. And then after that, because you also ended up in Sri Lanka, didn't you?
Yeah. That was the end of the first Asia trip. I loved it so much. Jeff and Chris and Shelby, three of my closest friends, you know them. They flew out and met me there. So we were all there together for a month. And yeah, we always refer to it as Magic Island because it was just literally magic was happening every day. It was unreal. There's like crystals growing out of the ground, like rose quartz mountains made of rose quartz that you just like are walking on and realize you're walking on a giant crystal. And like, it was actually just magic there.
Whoa, I had no idea. Yeah. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, and for me, it was like my closest taste I've had of India because like I've wanted to go to India for so long. I actually wasn't able to get a visa for India on my Asia trip. I tried. So I would have gone, but I know you've spent a lot of time there. And for me, Sri Lanka was kind of like my taste of it, as close as I could get.
Yeah, I've heard that they're very similar to, well, I've heard that Sri Lanka is similar to the south of India, which I still really want to go to. I've only ever been through the north, but
And then I also heard the pictures are like mountainous.
Yeah.
So beautiful.
Yeah, I know. It's certain parts of India, it's very like, especially like Himachal, that state is very fresh water and mountains and waterfalls and all of that kind of stuff. So
oh my gosh.
Yes, yeah, very magical. But
how long have you spent in India total? I feel like you've like straight up lived there at this point.
Yeah, actually in 2017 I went back and I was there for I think 5 months again. Yeah, I spent 5 months and I went and I got my yoga teacher training and And I kept meaning to leave and travel outside of this one spot because I basically spent most of my time in Dharamsala and like McLeod Ganj area. And I kept saying, I'm going to go and travel elsewhere. But I kept getting caught in this, like, I just had such a good community and like friends there where I was like, you know, sometimes you travel and other times you just gotta live. So
It's important to listen to that too. Cause yeah, often you can get caught up with like itineraries or like things that you really intend to do or see. But I think it's all about surrendering to what you're supposed to be doing and learning. And sometimes that means like staying put in one place for longer than you think. And
oh yeah, definitely.
Kind of scrapping the plan completely. That's what I like to do.
Yeah. And like in this place, there's, you know, you can take, I mean, there's just so much learning that you can do. So I took Hindi lessons from a quadriplegic. That's a fun story. I didn't know he was a quadriplegic.
Oh my gosh.
It's like, how would I not know that? And then I'll come back to that in a sec, but like cooking lessons, music lessons, poi lessons, like there was just so much that you could do and learn when you were there. But yeah, the story of the quadriplegic guy. So I had noticed that there was a sign that said Hindi lessons. And I was like, oh, that's something that I've wanted to do.
Yeah.
So, you know, I start asking around and, you know, you get pointed in the right direction. And I go up to this house, and this is actually the same woman that I took my cooking lessons from. And she points me into like the house and towards a room. So I walk in there, and there's a man laying in bed. And I was just like, can I take Hindi lessons? And he's like, yeah, come back tomorrow at the same time. So I come back, and he's kind of just verbally like, and he's still in bed though. And I'm like, he's giving me like verbal directions. Are you not
getting up?
Yeah. But I don't know well enough to like ask. I'm like, okay, yeah. I've seen weirder in India. So I'm like, okay, like I'm just not going to ask. And then I was on like my second or third lesson. He asked me to pass him my notebook and pen and to put it right in front of him. And he started writing with his mouth, like with the pencil in his mouth. And I was just like, oh my gosh, I was like, this guy is a quadriplegic. And then he got into this story of how he was a mountain man, like a mountaineer. And he used to, you know, take people and tourists on tours. And before that he was a cattle herder.
Okay.
And, I guess one day he like fell off his roof, and it was in the process of like where he had landed that people picked him up and moved him. And it was when they moved him, it like broke his, his spine.
So not the actual fall.
No, I guess it was like them moving him. So yeah.
Oh my gosh. Crazy.
So he still needed to make money.
You Hindi for how long?
Oh, I think I went to him for, I think it was a little over a month or something. It was, it was fun.
It's a solid foundation.
Yeah. So that was a lot of fun. So it was a really cool experience. It's like those travel moments that you know, stick with. And I mean, over the last few years, you know, so many moments where I've had to stay put, and I'm just like, okay, I in my mind can travel anywhere I want, and I can go back to all these fun memories.
Totally. And like all the photos too. Cause I'm like, when you're in that constant adventure mode, it's like experience after experience, you're just like absorbing it all, and you don't really have that much time to actually like reflect. I realized I hadn't really reflected at all on my trips until COVID hit. And I got laid off, and I looked over at my literal pile of journals. I have like, it was like 12 full journals, because I would write almost every day. And I was like, wow, I haven't looked at these. Like, I haven't had the time to really sit with them in the way I wanted to, like uninterrupted, present, until I got laid off. So it was such a gift. I spent like the first 2 or 3 weeks of being laid off for COVID, just exploring my journals and like reliving every single moment. And it was so awesome.
So nice. I know I always bring travel journals. I was actually talking about this the other day. My first travel journal from this, like, I don't know, 10 years ago from Thailand. Oh my God. Some of those journal entries though, you're like, what an idiot.
You're really dumb.
You're like, oh my God. I know. There's this one really funny one here where I had first got to Bangkok, and I was really, I was feeling super culture shocked by like all of the like severe, like abject poverty that was just like everywhere. And I was, everyone that I was with had gone out drinking, and I was just like, almost like so, I was almost like traumatized from seeing all of the like poverty and poor people, where I was like, how can you go out and party and drink right now?
Yeah.
I went back to my,
it's so weird. Yeah. You kind of have to have like a cognitive dissonance in a way.
Yeah. Cause it's so like in your face. And like, that was my first real experience with it. So I just have this journal entry of me in my room in Bangkok, this like super emo 20-year-old me writing this crappy journal entry. Like, it's like, you're in paradise right now. Like maybe Bangkok is a shithole, but like, come on, you're gonna be on the beaches in 2 days. Shut up.
I know. Everything feels very monumental. Like every place you are, every day, every experience just feels like so all-encompassing. Like that's going to be forever in a way.
Oh, yeah. What's the worst place you've ever been?
Oh my gosh.
You know, those places where like either your skin crawls because you feel unsafe or because like people are friendly and it's just like weird vibes.
Yeah, I've totally, let's see. I feel like I kind of like block those out a little bit. The first place that comes to mind, it wasn't like terrible. I would just never go back to Phuket. It was just kind of like high Vegas.
I was literally just thinking the same thing.
Really?
Yeah. And PP. I didn't like PP.
Yeah. I had a lot of fun there because I just ate weed brownies every day. So with my best friend, but yeah, Morgan and I went to Phuket together and like we made it fun by just like going to these nightclubs that are literally empty and just dancing really stupid, the two of us. So that was fun, but we're just like walking around. We're like, everything just feels so contrived. And it was just like the kind of place I would not go back, but we did make the most of it. We found this club that was like legitimately empty with these like giant kind of it was just like a very elaborate room, but completely empty with a DJ super up high. We're the only people in there and all the like bartenders and servers are just like, their arms are crossed and they're just looking at us. So we just like, and there's this huge fog machine. So there's this like really dramatic fog. So me and her just danced on really brownies. Ridiculously and made it fun, but it was just really silly.
Was that on Hadron? Was that?
No, that was just in like Phuket City, kind of.
Okay.
I feel like we were just like in the city. I don't know where exactly.
Wait, I'm trying to remember because this was years ago. Is Phuket the same? Is that like where that's like Hadron, Hajwan, like the full moon party beach? Or am I totally screwing that up?
That's Koh Phangan.
Okay, yes.
Phuket is on the mainland. I think it's on like the western side.
That's actually,
I could be wrong.
Phuket, is that near Krabi? I
think maybe a little bit geographically.
Okay.
But I can't think of the map right now.
Okay, so I totally got that mixed up. The place that I did not like was Hadron in Koh Phangan because I found it to be like too, was just
that I found was the full moon party place,
yeah. But I loved Hajwan, the other beach that's kind of like you have to take a long tailboat, like about 15 minutes to get there. So nice.
About that.
But I didn't like Hadron and PP. I found to be, kind of same thing. Like I found people to not be like very friendly and it was just like too much drunken tourists wandering around. And like, I was totally, when I saw someone carrying a monkey that was smoking a cigarette, wearing baby clothes, I was like, I just can't, this is like, there's just wrong on so many levels. I was like, I'm out of here. So
that's the stuff that really kills me, like just like the way they treat animals
in Thailand. It's pretty bad.
Yeah, it's just like they just see them differently than other people might, like myself. Like I just, yeah, whenever I saw anything remotely sad involving an animal, I would just bawl and like feel so helpless. I got my puppy right here. She's well taken care of.
See, and that's the thing that I liked. Yeah. And that's why I liked India, because I've found like there's more of, I'm sure like people anywhere can be cruel to animals, which is terrible. But I found for the most part, what I saw in India was just this sort of like, oh, it's a monkey temple and the monkeys just like people aren't I personally, in all the time that I've spent there, have not seen people being cruel to animals. It's like, right, you know, yeah, you feed the street animals, the dogs, the cows. And
but
like,
they're not like on a chain with people asking you money to like pet them or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's it. Like, here's the thing. Like, I feel like it's a different kind of travel. Like, and I've often thought about it. I'm like in my early 20s going to Thailand, at least to Southern Thailand, was like, whoa, so fun. I'm like, I think, would I even like it now? Like, unless I went to some really remote islands, would I even enjoy that? Maybe the North.
Probably not.
But yeah, because I enjoy, I don't like places that are like full of like crazy full of tourists. I like feeling the vibes.
Me either. Not anymore. Like, when you're in your early 20s, you're like looking for that, right?
Yeah.
But now it's like, where can I go to like have solitude and peace and not, have it feel contrived, you know, looking for that like authentic place that hasn't been discovered yet. It just gets harder and harder.
Mm-hmm. Well, you would love India.
Yeah. Okay. When you go back, I'm coming.
Oh my God. Oh, I saw that little creature smile. Yes. Yes. Oh my God. I know. I'm just like, I don't know why people are like, why do you love India so much? And I'm like, I really don't know. I feel like, you know, the first trip that I went, I was 22. And so I didn't have the kind of maturity or life experience that I did when I went back at 27. And when I went back the second time, it was just so much better because I felt like I already knew what to expect and what not to expect. And I also, I don't know, it was like I got into Delhi and it literally just, it was like I could breathe again. Like I feel like here I can't breathe. I feel like over there it's like, oh, like that old pair of jeans that still fit from high school.
Your old Levi's. A couple rips in them.
Oh, yeah.
I totally get that. I felt that when I landed in Asia for the first time. It was like, it was Bali where we landed. And it was just like, yeah, this breath of fresh air, even though it's like so muggy and humid, it's like metaphorically so fresh. And I just felt like, yeah, I could just like relax into my own skin because I don't know, there's just less like rules and regulations and like bureaucracy. And I don't know, here, like I love Canada, but it's like, there's so many walls too.
We're overly regulated.
Everything has to have walls, like physical buildings because it's cold. But then, yeah, just like so much regulation and bureaucracy. Whereas there it's like, most buildings don't have walls and it's just breezy. You can just go get a moped and you don't need a driver's license. It's so thrilling. I love it. If it's our vibe, I think.
I know. The wild, wild west. I know. I like, you know, like you can just hop in the back of like a chicken truck with a bunch of animals and people and just like, you know, it's like wild, but you're like, so I don't know. It's like, it might sound crazy because people are like, oh, that seems uncivilized, but it actually is so amazing. So until you try it, oh man.
That's funny you mentioned the chicken truck because one of the pages in my journal was an entire page dedicated to the different modes of transportation I used. And some of them are just like so ludicrous. It's like a moped with four other people or like the top of a semi truck holding my backpack. Like,
oh my God. When you get like to ride on the bus on the top of the bus with your bags, that's literally the best.
It's my favorite. It's so terrifyingly exhilarating.
I know. Oh my God. It's so true.
Holding on for your life.
Yeah. I think, it was like an exciting moment where we were hitchhiking and we wanted to go to, I think it was from Lombok to Java because we wanted to hike the volcano there. And we hitchhiked from like, you know, the one back of a truck to the next till we're in like the back of like a rice truck. And I'm like, so excited. I'm like looking up in the stars and I'm like, yeah, time of my life. And then we get there and, we thought, oh, we'll just like take out cash when we get there, you know? Ooh. Well, we get there and they don't take credit cards. They don't have an ATM. and we literally are in the middle of nowhere and had nowhere to sleep. We're just like, oh,
no, that's the worst. The AM thing is always so important to be like, where's the nearest? Because sometimes it's nowhere.
Yeah, it was like there was like, lucky enough, some woman from Singapore let us stay with her. But in the morning, she was getting up to go hike this amazing volcano that we couldn't even pay for to go and hike. And we have to get booted out of her room when she leaves in the morning. So it's like still dark out. We've got our bags. We're like so cold. We're out of cigarettes. I don't smoke anymore, but we did. It was like the travel smokes. We're like out of cigarettes.
In Asia. I smoked all of Asia and not since.
Yeah, I know. It's like, it's like for some reason you can do it over there and it's fine, but here it's gross. But yeah, like, you know, out of smokes, it's cold, it's still dark out. And I just remember like standing there and then like the first beam of sunlight like hit on the ground. We're both like fighting over like the sunlight. We're standing there and there's like this guy in his little booth that's like guarding the gate and it's like got heat and stuff. And he's standing there, he's drinking a warm, hot drink, probably coffee, and he's smoking a cigarette, just staring at us. We're just like in this little beam of light, just like, then we see the volcano starting to appear through the clouds and we're just like, fuck. Oh my gosh.
This man with his coffee and smoke is like the vision of what you aspire to be. Like, how do I get what you have?
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so something that you recently did was a social media diet, and I wanted to talk to you about that because first of all, the internet and social media right now is so volatile, and I've personally been like
the staying, shit show.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's not that there isn't beautiful things happening in the world, but we've never been so connected before at any point in time, so this onslaught of negativity about what's happening everywhere, I think is causing, like, I mean, for me, it was causing like a lot of mental distress. So
I think probably for everyone, like me too. That's part of why I went off. Like when was it? It was September that I took the break for 3 months. And I was just like experiencing a lot of anxiety and like feelings of depression, which I've never experienced before, which I'm lucky to have never like felt anxiety or depression before. So it's entirely new to me. So I just didn't like have the tools to know how to manage it because it was new. And so I was just like becoming aware of like what things were making it better and what was making it worse. And being on my phone was definitely making it worse. So I was like, I just need to, it was just like becoming really overwhelming. It's like too much information, you know, like we're only programmed to absorb so much feelings and thoughts and ideas. And we're just getting bombarded with like way more than we can even process. So I was just like, I need to just shut this off and like go inward deeply just to my own self. Cause that's where I'll find like the piece I'm looking for. And it really helped. It worked.
So you took 3 months.
Yeah. And when I deleted the apps, I didn't have like a timeline in mind. So when like the 3 months kind of started approaching, I just actually felt way better. I was in a way better headspace. And I just felt kind of ready to come back and enjoy the positives to it. And I felt like I'm more equipped to deal with the negatives. But it still is quite addicting. I find it really compulsive, which I
P.S. it's 11:11.
Oh my gosh. Oh, it's 12:11 here though.
Ooh. Okay. So just special for me, not for you. Okay. Okay. Got it. All right. I will be a millionaire soon. Just kidding. Yes. That was my wish.
It's like, it can be just like a vortex of gloom, you know? It can also be like super uplifting, but I find like when I would see like pictures and videos of friends or family that I miss because I can't see them because of COVID, it would make me feel worse seeing the pictures and videos. Like it would make me more sad. So I was like, I would rather just like not see this and and just like think of them. And yeah, there were also so many things I wanted to accomplish, like my book. I would be organizing the poems, kind of editing them, and every like 10 minutes before I went off social media, I would check to see if anything happened on my phone. And that's just so counterintuitive to writing a book. Like you need uninterrupted focus. And I was just so distracted.
Yeah. It robs your productivity massively and your creativity. Yeah. And I agree. It's not even necessarily just when you're looking and seeing incredibly, you know, negative fear-mongering type things about what's happening politically and around the world, COVID, blah, blah, blah. It's this, yeah, compulsion. And these apps are designed to keep us locked in. They're designed to like hypnotize us. And I, you know, I'm honestly, this is why I was so interested in having this conversation, is that I have this like love-hate relationship with my phone and social media in general. I'm utilizing it for the work that I'm doing, and I am trying to produce, you know, some work and positivity and be of service in what I do, because for me, anything I do has to have meaning to it. Otherwise, I don't feel like it doesn't sustain my passion, I guess. But at the same time, because I have to be, you know, building these platforms and relationships and, you know, putting my stuff out there, it's through social media. But I almost over the last, especially since all of this stuff over the last year, I kind of hit a point just before Christmas where I was like, I felt so burnt out and so run down from just all of the negativity over and over and over that I've just kind of like put a pause on how much I'm on my phone. And I think I'm really thinking about deleting my apps and just releasing my podcasts anyways and continuing to do them, but just not worrying about the whole like.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's an awesome idea. And I'm still kind of in the phase of like, I came back on social media because I want to connect with people about my book and writing. And I was like, when I originally went off of it, I was like, I'm going to trailblaze a way of promoting your business or art without social media. And even in my head, I'm like, I don't know what this plan is at all, because it seems almost impossible now. But I was like, there has to be a way. So the best thing I could think of is not possible during COVID, unfortunately, but what I want to do is just be actually like out in the physical real world, in the community, in like downtown Calgary, when there's actually people out and about, performing my poems, like speaking them to in people's like actual presence, and going to like poetry readings and open mic cafes and kind of the old school way, because that really fills me up whenever I've done that in the past. And I was so ready to just go for that, but then there's another lockdown, and it's kind of like the only way of sharing at the moment.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
I know it is. It's a really weird time, and I feel you on that. If I could do it the old school way, I definitely would as well, because I function better not on social media. Like the way that I have to work, like my own mind, I can't be somebody that's like rushing around, that frantic energy, which I think the pattern interrupt of, you know, all these different apps pulling your attention this way, it's pattern interrupt. Let me pull you this way, then that way, then this. I actually, I have my phone set up the best way I possibly can. It is always on silent. People already know if you text me, it might be a while before I text you back. It could be days. It could be a week, because I
think that's really good.
Yeah. And like, I have all of my notifications set to off. There's nothing that can
pull me too in. I hate those things and the little like red, like dot, but it's all just like trying to distract you.
That's Well, I was finding that those like little like dings and notifications were giving me anxiety. So I've actually probably for almost 4 years have set my phone up like this, but I'm still somebody who feels like, I just am not good at creating or being productive if I have this phone so present in my life. I need to almost like turn it off or put it in another room.
Yeah.
So I can get anything done in a day. Otherwise it's like, oh, I have to respond to this. I have to respond to that. I have to respond to this person and that person. And this
it's email. Like in the back of your mind, if it's active, right?
Yeah.
I wonder if everyone is like that. Cause like, I'm definitely like that. Hmm. I find it hard to put up a wall if I'm using it at all. It's yeah. like very black or white. It's mm-hmm. like, I'm checking it compulsively or I just don't have social media. I find, yeah, that balance is so tricky. Like already I'm finding, I think I've had it back for like 3 weeks, maybe more. I don't know. Time is weird right now. But when I was off it, I read 4 books. Anytime I was just like wanting to sit and kind of chill, I would pick up a book, which was what I was hoping would be a byproduct of leaving social media. Since I got back on, I haven't read once. And I'm like, so ashamed. I'm like, that was like such a daily activity for me was reading. And now I pick up my phone instead because it's more alluring, I guess, you know?
Yeah. I mean, and this is the thing, like I've had to kind of create some pretty strict boundaries with myself around my phone, because I know that if I pick up my phone first thing in the morning, what I'm doing is scattering my energy to the winds of social media. So what I have done is I have like a little, I don't know if you can even see it up there, but I have my list of things that I do, and it says, and it's not necessarily in this order, but it's meditation, affirmations, visualization, exercise, reading, and journaling. And I have to do that stuff all first before I even so much as look at my phone. So if
I love that.
Yeah. And so appointments, everything I make is always after I know that I'm going to have gotten all of that stuff done in the morning, because that's me time. So it does require me getting up usually between like 5:30 and 6:30 in the morning. But
that's amazing though. That's what I want to do. I have like the same list as you. But I also added walk with my dogs and tarot. I haven't started them yet. Like every day kind of keeps going by and I'm like, oh, tomorrow. But I really love your idea of not checking your phone until you've done all those. Mm-hmm. Cause I think that's where I'm failing before starting, is I didn't have that rule. So I just look at my phone and then everything's kind of gone to shit already before I start. Yeah.
Well, another thing that I did too was I stopped using my phone as my alarm. So I turn my phone off at night and I try to plug it in and leave it in the kitchen while it charges. And what I do is I got this light alarm clock. So it starts to light up. I have it. So if I want to wake up and be up by like, I don't know, let's say 6, it will start to like turn on at like 5 a.m. and slowly the light gets brighter and brighter and brighter. So it's kind of
imitating a sunrise.
Yeah. And so it makes you wake up without that jarring wake to the sound. And then you're also not like your phone isn't in your hand. Right. So you're kind of just,
there's all the kind of tricks. I like that. Mm-hmm. I feel like, yeah, you're on a good path with that. I should do the same. Can you link me to that alarm?
Yes, I can. I think it was just off of Amazon for like, I don't know, less than $20 or something. You can get one. And yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's so hard like to get up when it's still dark out. So having that light has made a big difference, because I think it works with your melatonin. And then in the evening, I wear these like super nerdy melatonin goggles. I like swear if I put them on right now, I'd look like Neo from the Matrix. I'm going to show you.
Neo from the Matrix.
So okay, I'm going to show you. I'm going to grab them one sec.
Hey, Neo. Sleepy puppy.
Oh my God, I hope you're ready for this.
I'm so thrilled. Yes. Okay.
You look
ravishing right now.
I fashion. Oh my God. Think
you'd be like red and burnt orange. Like this is so Vogue.
Well, they block out the light. So if I wear them after Like I usually put them on when I take my melatonin in the evening. So around like 8 o'clock, put those on. Cause then I'm not, if I'm looking at a screen, which I try not to, but if I have these on, it blocks them or it blocks the screen from like messing with melatonin.
Yeah. Our circadian rhythms have been like so effed by just, I mean, the invention of light and electricity and everything. It's awesome, but it's like, yeah, we're not naturally supposed to be up when it's dark out. Mm-hmm. You know, back in the day, people would be maybe around a fire, but yeah, all these unnatural ways of inducing like light and all these like energies that wake you up, like looking at your phone in bed, it's just so the opposite of what is natural. So I like that you've kind of tackled it like that. That's awesome.
Yeah. Well, if I stare at my phone in the evening, like the other night I was working on some art and I was trying to finish it. And I usually shut my stuff down by about 8 o'clock. So I'm not doing that. And I didn't, and I needed to see the like vividness of the colors. So I didn't put these goggles on. I wasn't wearing them. And I swear I did not sleep that night. It was like the worst, you know, those nights when you just
invaded you.
It
entered. I want to get one of those. That's so cool.
Yeah. Oh my God. I know a few companies make them, but yeah. Okay. So what were some of the like insights that you had during this break? This is so fun, by the way.
I know, I love this. I learned that I feel so inspired and joyful after reading actual books. Like it actually like revitalizes my soul so much, especially reading poetry. Like the mood and energy it puts me in is just like so grounding. And I just remembered how much I love reading. I also realized that I'm a super sensitive person, which I already knew, but like, yeah, I realized that I'm just like I absorb energy of everything, like whoever's around me or whether it's social media, all of those energies I feel like are just like entering me, and I need to prepare myself better for that. And kind of put up like a nice little Reiki shield around myself, because I've struggled with that too as a server. Like I've been waitressing for more than 10 years and it's always really affected me negatively because of that, because I just absorb it all. And I haven't yet figured out a way to not absorb other people's energies. So I think that's something I learned from getting off social media, was I just felt so much more, the energy that was going on within me was all my own. So I loved it. So yeah, I found that really healing, kind of just coming back to myself, my own feelings and thoughts. Blocking out all the rest.
I can relate to that for sure. Yeah, I know. It's difficult to
finish my book. Like I finished reading it, which was awesome. I don't think I could have done it without going off social media.
No, because you do need to be in your own space. You need to be inspired and be in your own element. And if you constantly have things pulling your energy and your attention this way and that way, it's like, how can you, because I feel like with art of any kind, especially with writing, it has to flow through you. It's not something where you're like, I can just sit here and what will sound good. It's like you have to be on that vibe and let it go flow through you.
Totally. So, it's such a crazy balance, and so many subtleties play into it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's like discipline and structure and then creativity, and then like, if they meet, then there's flow, and it's like impossible to achieve if you're like always looking at your phone. So I did do all my goals. I finished my book. It still needs to be edited. Like I finished compiling all the poems, editing them to my best ability. And then I sent it to my editor. So that was one of my goals. And then to read 5 books was my other goal, but I read 4. And yeah, so I achieved them, and just better mental health. So I felt like when I came back to social media, I was in a better, I am in a better headspace to kind of approach it. And yeah, I'd never dealt with depression or anxiety. So I was like, a lot of my poetry can be very like whimsical and uplifting. And I was like, I don't know how to present myself not in that way, because it was like so new to me to feel so dark. So that's kind of another reason I left, because I was like, I don't want to show this part of myself.
Oh, and that's,
which I think it's important to do that, but I wasn't ready because I was still just like in it.
Yeah. And that's the thing too, when there's so much of that already going on out there, you're like, is that like, you know, yeah, the harshness of life is a real thing, but is that where I am best serving, you know?
Yeah. Like I want to be a kind of a light warrior, like a beacon of light. And I don't want to disregard the darkness, which has been a huge lesson during COVID. Mm-hmm. I've become more friends with that side of the world and myself, but yeah, I think my poetry is best served in when I'm in that flow of like kind of ecstatic poetry and mm-hmm. that uplifting. And I was not feeling that at all at the time. So when I felt that kind of glimmer coming back, I was like, okay, maybe I can come back now, but I might leave again in a bit. We'll see.
Oh, you're inspiring me, because I have, and that's exactly kind of where I've come to with my book. Cause I'm like, I have a book outline. I have like, I know what I need to do, and I've written a ton, but I reached a point where I think, yeah, like probably over the last few months, like just struggling, just like everybody else, and like wanting to, you know, be uplifting and light, but struggling with that in myself. And so it was like, okay, I literally feel like I can't, there, you know, like there's nothing I can say right now. I've just kind of, it's almost like a writer's block where you're like, there's nothing I can say right now, because how can I, you know, inspire other people and empower other people when I feel so disempowered right now by all of the negativity and fears and stuff. So I know exactly.
That's exactly where I was. And yeah, it's like, it's important to take care of yourself first. And mm-hmm. that's what I was doing. I was like, I need to sort out my own self, my emotions, like what's going on. And it did take 3 months, but it worked. And I think it's so important I think it's an old saying maybe, but like you have to fill up your own cup first before you can overflow into others. Mm-hmm. You don't take care of filling up your own cup, then you don't really have much to give others, right? You're just scraping.
Yeah. And also like whatever you have inside is what's going to come out too. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of thinking about that the other day, and actually I'll share this with you.
Yeah.
Okay. So when you squeeze an orange, you get orange juice. You don't get apple from an orange. You get whatever from that which you squeeze. Just like your eye. If you're full of shit, when you're juiced, all you get is shit. I was like, this is the most profound thing I can come up with.
Right, I love that. That's such a you thing to have written. I love it. That's so good.
Oh my God.
Like profound yet with a sense of humor. So you.
Oh, I know. 2020, they tried to take all sense of humor and comedy away, and I held on.
Hold on tight. Guard it.
You can't joke. You're not allowed to joke anymore. So I actually wanted to ask you, I wanted to come back to the reading thing, because this is something I've observed in myself, is this, like 10 years ago, like before I was on social media and stuff really very much, I used to read a ton. Like you were saying about reading, like, I mean, I was going through books all the time, and now, something I've noticed is my attention span and ability to focus one sentence at a time to finish a page. And I'm like, I'm barely through one paragraph and my mind is wandering. And I'm like, this is like programming from like the, you know, your attention constantly like flickering between apps and stuff. Did you totally notice that when you first started a little bit, or?
Mm, not sure. Like I tend to read really quickly, and I think sometimes I like skim a little bit, but the way I read, I just get like super absorbed to the point where I don't even know, like I'm kind of blacking out in a way. I like tear through the books, and sometimes I might not be like reading every sentence in a super present way. Like I think I'll like skip words. Kind of like, I don't know, like when I'm typing, I type so fast. I just try and do everything really fast sometimes. So yeah, with reading, I feel like, I find it easy to focus, but I do kind of rush and skim sometimes. That's why I like poetry, because you can't do that. And it really slows me down. You like have to read every line and let it sink in. So if I'm reading a novel, I'm tearing through at warp speed, and if it's poetry, it like grounds me.
Okay. So you're kind of speed reading. Cause I think speed reading, that's like, I'm pretty sure
why I do it. I just get so, I've been reading Margaret Atwood. So all four books I read on my social media break were written by her. I'm really obsessed with her. And I just get so excited to learn what's going to happen that it's just like, yeah, the page turner thing. Like I'm just so thrilled.
So a speed reading through, and these would be fiction books.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All the books of hers I've read, there's a lot of hers I haven't, but they're mostly dystopian fiction. So I've been finding it really comforting since we're living in like a dystopian time, and we always have in a way, but more so now. So it's kind of creepily comforting, because like her dystopian worlds are reminiscent of our current world, but like much worse. So in comparison, our world now is better. So that's kind of why I've gravitated towards Margaret Atwood's dystopian books. And
see the escape. I know, the escape and the perspective. Okay, maybe I'm reading the wrong books. I don't know. All right,
read Margaret Atwood. I don't know, she might not be for everyone, but I'm so obsessed. She's a master.
Well, I like a good story, and it's definitely different when you're reading and something is entertaining you versus like you need to absorb information and try to like,
yeah,
think about what's being said. I don't know.
Some fiction. I used to only read nonfiction. I would only read like books on different like ecosystems and animals and self-help, but I started reading fiction, and it's like just a lot more enjoyable. Like it's kind of that escape. Where the Crawdads Sing, I read this year as well. I think you would really like that book. Ooh. It's incredible. It's by Delia Owens. It's like a story of this young girl who grows up in the swamps of North Carolina by herself as a kid. It's just kind of, I think any like woman who loves the wild would really love that book.
Okay. Well, I know I do have a few like that, and I really did enjoy them. Like Shantaram is one of my favorites, and then Mutant Message Down Under is another one. Have you read that one?
No.
It's really good. Yeah, it's about a woman who goes, it's been years since I read it, but she was like a businesswoman or something like that. Anyways, and she goes to Australia, and she ends up being like led out into the outback, basically like without a return, and ends up like going on this walkabout with the Aborigines, and like, you know, basically, I can't remember exactly like the details of it, but she ends up having this like insane experience where, and like, it's allegedly like a true story based on a true story,
right?
But it's a very good read as well.
How much is true, but it also doesn't matter. It's like when you're reading it, you believe it. And that's what matters. Just like that. Yeah.
I want to believe.
I need to believe. I believed in Santa till I was like pretty old, so easy to capture my
just around the time when I was fighting over the clown and the Nevermore claw. So basically 23. So okay, like what would probably be, if you could have, during that time, like if you had like one main like insight that really came to you to share with other people who are kind of on the fence about going on a social media diet or not, like.
I would say if you at all feel worse, or if you at all feel like your light is diminished in any way after going on social media, just take a break and just try it, because it's honestly like liberating, and you'll meet yourself, which can be scary, but it's kind of like the modern version of going off into a cabin in the woods by yourself. It's like that distance is so important to learning about yourself and what you actually might end up going and doing in a physical, tangible way. Like what could you create? Like what needs to be brought out into this world? It's so important to find that out. And yeah, I think that's the only way to do it. Cut the distractions and just dive into your own self and see what you find and see what you can bring back to others.
Why do you think people are so addicted to their phones, other than the, like, you know, way that the apps are built? Like, what do you think it is? Like,
what's your take? I mean, that it's so huge, like how they're designed with like psychiatrists on the team, like tweaking every little thing to make it addictive. So I think that is such a big part of it, because it's like smarter than us, you know, it's a computer and it's designed to do that job, to hold your attention. So that's definitely why it's so addicting. But yeah, I think they kind of prey on our deep seated desire for connection, because that's so ingrained in humanity. And that's why COVID's been so devastating. It's like, yeah, we're creatures of one another, you know, that connection is so important. So it's kind of like all we have now in that sense, if we can't physically be together. So I think that's another way it gets us even worse now during COVID. Because yeah, not everyone can have that face-to-face connection. So yeah, I think it honestly just like preys on our most primal needs and desires, and also, yeah, the desire and need to be seen, to be understood. Yeah, sharing, like we all want to share what we think and feel. I think it's just a perfect recipe for being super addictive.
Yeah. And I think it also, I think it affects your dopamine, the way that when you get a hit of dopamine, it like floods your dopamine. And
then when you get likes,
yeah,
your little dopamine center starts like popping off.
Yeah, totally. Instead of just being like
crazy,
instead of just having like a supportive community. I know that's the thing I've really missed the most. And I've been trying to figure out how I can create something like that, like even like an online like group, or like just some sort of you know, mastermind, yeah, of like minds who are like creating and doing, and yeah, anyone's interested in something like this. Like I want to figure out a way to connect on a regular basis where like people can share ideas and like encourage each other, because I feel like it's very hard to accomplish those things if you don't have that connection sort of need being met and the encouragement that goes along with it. And
totally,
you know,
especially for those of us who are like more extroverted, which I find I always was, but I've the last couple of years become a little more introverted. I guess we're all a bit of both, but yeah, for those of us who need that collaborative community connection, it's like such a shock to the system to only get it through a screen now. So but I think that's a good idea, like create a like-minded community, but have it be like once a week at a certain time. So it's not, yeah, like you're always checking it.
Yeah.
Something like that, like a weekly sharing, like, I don't know, our friend Shelby was starting some sort of like open mic thing.
Oh,
over like Zoom? That. Like you share, I'm not sure the details. I got to ask her, because she invited me, but then I didn't hear anything else. But yeah, kind of like a safe communal space to share what we're working on, whether it's like a poem or just a thought or a song, like anything. So something like that would be fun.
I know, that's what I was thinking. Well, we can definitely talk some more about this because I've been definitely like needing some kind of, group that, or needing to create some kind of group that, you know, everyone can kind of share ideas and connect and encourage mm-hmm. one another. Because I think that if you don't have a supportive network and if you are living in any kind of isolation, which most of us are right now, it's like hard to keep that momentum and steam going forward, you know? So,
yeah. Yeah. Cause sometimes those interactions are what like sparks an idea or creativity. Sometimes it's hard when you're just like roaming around your own house, like a ghoul for weeks. Especially for me, my writing is like, I really have to try and write if I'm at home or in like a regular like life city kind of life situation. Mm-hmm. I just don't journal. I find it super hard. But like when I'm traveling, it's just like exploding out of me. I can't write fast enough. So yeah, for me, those experiences are so important for creativity. So yeah.
Well, we should create something like that. I was actually thinking about this before I hopped on today. I was just like, you know, what would be like a way where, you know, you can support one another and you can, you know, share your ideas, you can support each other's platforms and all of that. Because yeah. I think that when you can mastermind together and you're all, you know, and also making those connections too, you never know like, oh, like this person might have an idea or some, you know, insight into what I'm doing that,
boom, yeah, that I'm not seeing.
Totally.
Or like your like alarm clock thing and like not going on your phone till you've done all your list. Like I needed that idea so bad and I just didn't know. And so now, cause you told me that, like, I feel like I'm just going to level up even more. So it's like, yeah, how many more of those things will come up that will benefit all of us?
Yeah. And the leveling up, that's like so perfect. That's exactly it. When you're surrounded by really positive people and you're sharing ideas, you're leveling up in, you know, in every way. And when you start growing, you know, on like a personal level, everything else just kind of falls into place. So yes, let's do it. Yeah. Oh my God. Okay. Yay.
Help everyone level up.
Yes. Okay. So, your poetry book, can you share with the class what it is all about? And then do you have some poetry you can share?
Yes. Yay. So yeah, this book is, the general theme is nature. But yeah, more specifically, like our connection to nature, my own personal deep longing to be as close to nature as possible, loving animals and every living thing. That's the vibe of the book. And yeah, it's kind of like a collection of poems I've been writing my whole life. Like this will be my first book. And when I went through those stacks of journals at the beginning of COVID, I typed up every single poem that was in any of those journals or any story that sparked a poem. So it's kind of beginning that huge process of getting it from the scribbles into a more book related format. Yeah, it's been a really fun process. Then I got to choose which poems would make the cut, organize them. And yeah, it's taken, I guess, almost a whole year now. 3 months shy of a year just to get it to the part where it's like a manuscript.
Wow. Which
I thought would mean it's almost done, but it's still not really. I got it back from my editor, which is my dad. He's an amazing poet and writer. He's a English teacher, creative writing master.
Yeah, he's a university professor, isn't he?
He did teach university in the past, but now he teaches grade high school in Seattle. Oh. Really cool school.
He's not like, in UAE anymore.
No, him and his wife moved back to the States like 4 years ago.
Okay.
So yeah, he's teaching at like a really amazing school, outside of Seattle. And yeah, I visited it a few times. There's like a huge forest and he like takes the kids out to experience nature while writing in the forest. And like, that's a huge thing. A theme of his teaching too is connection with nature. So it feels really special to share this same passion with my dad, and then also know that he's the best person who could edit this book because he gets it. So yeah, I got the edits back, and this poem actually has the edits on it.
Oh, awesome. I haven't
implemented yet, but
and you're so typing this, you're typing this all on a typewriter?
No, I like typewriter font.
Oh, because you said typing, and I was like, because I saw your photos. You have a photo of you with a typewriter, yeah. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. I, my friend lent that to me, and I'll give it back to her one day. We don't know if it works, but I do want to buy a typewriter that works. Yeah. And I would love to do like typed up poetry to like mail out to people. But yeah, in the meantime, I just use typewriter font.
Okay. Well, I was picturing you with a typewriter for some reason. So maybe
I love that you were, because anything that brings it back to like more tangible vibes, I love it.
Okay. So you have a poem here ready and prepared.
So I'll give just a little bit of context.
Okay.
So this one I wrote while I was camping alone, on an island just off of Tofino in BC. So it was like a 45-minute boat ride from Tofino to Flores Island, where I had like all my overnight camping gear, my tent, food, everything. Hiked 6 hours to the end of this peninsula where there's a bay called Cow Bay. Set up camp, and yeah, it's the first time I've ever done anything like that. Cause there's like bears and sea wolves and cougars on this island. And it's like
sea wolves. Did you just say sea wolves?
Yeah. Around Tofino, there's coastally adapted wolves that, they like forage for sea life on the beach. And, they're a bit smaller than timber wolves, but they're these very special sea wolves that just live there.
Wow. Okay. So
yeah. Whole time I'm hiking, I'm seeing their footprints the whole way. It was so cool. I didn't see one. I really wanted to see one, but the whole hike is like along these crazy, beautiful, rugged beaches on the edge of the West Coast. Like next landmass is Japan. And you're just on these like rugged beaches, and I'm just alone carrying all my stuff. And it would be like beach and then like epic ancient cedar forest, beach, forest, beach, forest, the whole 6 hours. And then the end is just like this huge bay. And yeah, I was completely alone. Like the last person I saw was like near the beginning of the hike, and they were going the other way to like leave the island.
What prompted you to do that? Like, first of all, that's so brave. Like, I would be
I just remembered I said I'm giving a little bit of context, but I'm like telling the whole story, but I love
telling. I want to know. I want to know.
It was actually my boyfriend's idea. So he thought of the hike, thought of the whole plan to do something like that, found the hike. And then I was like, oh my God, I want to do that. So it ended up being that I had 2 days off before he did. So I was like, I'm going first, I guess. So I went and did it, came back. It was 2 days, one night, came back, and he left the next morning. And we had like a pact that I wouldn't tell him anything because I didn't want to like influence his journey, you know? So I got home, told him nothing. And then he did the same thing the day after.
Oh my God. Okay. That's so fun.
Stories after that, which was super fun. So actually when he went, there were a lot of other people there at the same bay. I think there was like three other sets of groups of campers. Cause he was on a weekend. So I think I got lucky being on a weekday, and I was completely alone, which it was kind of terrifying, honestly, but.
Did you bring a knife or like some pepper spray or bear spray or anything?
A bear spray and a knife. And I didn't sleep at all. I wrote this instead of sleeping, actually. I was so terrified. I was like, I had to write the poem to deal with it. And
oh my God.
Yeah. Cause I would kind of try and sleep. I was so tired, but then I'd kind of like want to make sure my hand was close to the bear spray and the knife, but also not so close that I would like use it on myself on accident. So I took some like vlog videos, even though I don't vlog at all, but like in the morning, I'm like walking down this desolate beach. And my eyes are like so puffy because when I don't sleep there, I can't really open them. They're like, I look haggard, but I learned a lot. I just learned so much about myself and like, I was so proud of myself after, and I want to do it again because it really helps me write.
Mm, yeah. Just to
push yourself like that.
Well, I'm so proud of you. That's terrifying. Like that would be so scary. Like I feel like this is the one thing, when you're like a big, strong man, you feel a little more confident about those kinds of things. Like, of course there's always risks, you know, being out in the woods, but yeah.
Yeah. I'm not like super, I'm not physically fit, you know, like I don't think I can take on a bear.
Even if you were super physically fit, I think it's more the confidence, you know what I mean? Like, I think if you were like, you know, a big, strong man and like you faced a bear and like your confidence to handle the situation versus like, okay. But anyways, that's super.
And also cool. I made a mistake of, so I thought because it's an island, it's still a pretty big island, but I was like, I don't think there will be pumas. And that's kind of my bigger fear in the wild in Canada is pumas. I wanted to see a wolf. I've never seen one. I really wanted to see one. Didn't really want to see a bear, but my main concern was pumas. And
because they'll stalk you and you won't even know they're there.
You know, big cats, like they're amazing, terrifying. So I assumed that there weren't pumas on Flores Island until I decided to just double check right before I left. Like my backpack, I'm about to leave. And I'm like, I'll just check just to confirm that they're not there. And I just instantly found this news story of a puma on Flores who attacked this woman. And the woman was saved by her husband. Sadly, the puma died. The woman lived. But I was like, that's a great confidence booster right before I leave. So... and I didn't tell my boyfriend. So I'll read the poem.
Okay.
It's called Letters to the Midnight Wild. My calloused feet carried me 7 hours deep into impenetrable forest, utterly alone, revealed me to myself. Bathed in moon glow, I wrote to the wolves who prowled past my thinly veiled flesh, noses pressed into dirt as I lay, swaddled and shivering in this frail mesh tent. You did not split me open, nor gnaw my bones into toothpicks, wild fangs catching the fading firelight. To the ocean that could have swallowed the land in a single turbulent gulp, instead remained still. Your sultry salt tranquil, as if incapable of such colossal wreckage. To the bears who blundered behemoth over, honey fur painted with coal, you sensed my trembling heart, chose to leave me whole. Your lumbering paws idled onward with my exhale. To the rain from a mattress of clouds, you did not soak me to the core with fluid bullets, but materialized as fog, ominous and clinging. To the puma, who drifted through gnarled bracken, hunting mysteries of ebony night. Though our paths did not cross, I felt your indomitable ferocity, and it became my own.
That is so beautiful.
Thank you.
That's gorgeous. Yeah.
So I wrote that like at like 1 a.m. when I couldn't sleep in the tent.
Well, it's beautiful. I think that that's like one of the best things that you can do is like, it's like you transmute the, you know, anxieties and fears or some of the like darker feelings, uncomfortable feelings into something beautiful and shifting your perspective.
Yeah, just letting it flow through me. And I think it's so important as a writer. Like, I want to do a lot more of that, like just go off into the woods alone. And yeah, I think with creativity, it's so important to just find solitude, mm-hmm. you know, and inspiration from experience. And for me, nature inspires me the most. So yeah, it's definitely like a fearful poem, but also like so full of reverence and respect mm-hmm. for those animals. Because I wasn't afraid in the daylight. I was like so confident and I was like, it's beautiful. The moment the night fell, I was just like riddled with these fears, which I think is natural.
Yeah, but facing fears, it does grow your confidence massively. So like for you, facing those fears and, you know, choosing to write this poem and go through this experience, like, what do you think you left there with?
Oh my gosh, like just so much joy and confidence and like belief in myself. Knowing that I actually don't need another person around if I want to go camping, like that was huge. Usually I like rely on someone else to make the fire or like all those like camping tasks I naturally just like don't step up and do because there's usually someone else who just kind of wants to. So I really want to like level up in that way and change that and become more self-reliant in the wilderness. So for me, it was like a huge milestone to doing that.
Mm, yeah. And also the, like you said, the fear, but also the reverence towards those animals. I think that's important to have because mm-hmm. I think having that experience where you're just like, you know, these animals are beautiful, but they're also wild. And exactly. I'm a part of that. And I live in this comfortable container usually, but when you're really vulnerable like that,
yeah,
I think that's how we experience ourselves in a different light, which I think is important because you don't grow if you're always comfortable. Like you need those moments. So
exactly.
It's so cool.
And like, and it was such a wild, rugged place. Like I wish I could describe it. It was just like unbelievable. And there's these signs at the end that are like, use the food. There's like those metal food containers, mm-hmm. like use the food container to store anything, like including toothpaste. And they're really far from your tent. Mm-hmm. And it even said on the sign, it was like, put the clothes that you wore to cook in this container as well, far from your tent. So that's what the sign said. And I'm like, oh shit. Like I gotta be super on it. Cause yeah, it was like a very wild place. And yeah, I think just so much respect for the creatures who live there. And but yeah, fear and respect at the same time is important.
Yeah. Okay. And you lived in Tofino, didn't you, for a while?
Yeah. Yeah. Me and my boyfriend were there for like a year and a half or almost 2 years. And this trip happened like right when we moved there. It's like 2 weeks after. So yeah, we left 2 months into COVID. We moved away from Tofino and moved to Calgary.
Okay.
Mostly because of COVID. Because like you, in the restaurant industry there, you have to make all your money in the summer to survive the slow non-touristy winter. So with summer approaching and it looking like it might not open at all, you actually can't sustain your life if you miss a summer of work there. Mm-hmm. If you're not prepared, obviously financially. So we were like, oh, I guess we got to get to a city so we can like work. But I guess it was apparently still busy there last summer.
Yeah, Tofino is beautiful. I've been a couple of times. I love Tofino. It's gorgeous.
It's really like pinch yourself every single day kind of thing. Like it never becomes old that you're just like staring at the most beautiful nature every day. Like it's always, you're always in a state of wonder. It was just hard working in the service industry there because it's super intense. So yeah, I think I would maybe move back one day. Like I want to live somewhere remote, but got to figure out the job thing first. So writing can sustain me, I would live somewhere deep in the woods.
Yes, that's like what, that's how writers are supposed to live. Right? In the woods, a cabin in the woods. I know. I exactly. Seriously, that's my dream home. I'm like, cabin in the woods.
Yes. And you'll get it.
Costa Rica. Yes. Like, spend like half the year in Costa Rica, the other half the year in the Kootenays. I want to move like just outside of Nelson.
I love that. Yeah, I've been comparing like land prices around Canada and the States just to like get an idea. It'll probably take like 5 years to save, but I was looking at the Kootenays and it's so beautiful. Mountains and lakes.
Oh yeah. The Kootenays has everything that we have down here, but just like way more clean and pristine and
less people.
Oh yeah, exactly. Well, but you're lucky though with dual citizenship that you can, if you can go anywhere you want, because the States has like the one thing that the States has that we don't have is like culture.
There's such variety. Well, and so many different ecosystems.
Yeah. Like
deserts, you know, like swamps. They've got.
You could go live in a swamp, Sonia.
I've actually been thinking about it. I love swamps. I actually do. That's why I love that book where the crawdads sing. She like grows up in a swamp. I'm like, this is sick.
That could be your that could be your new life. There you go. Yeah, you have that variety with a dual citizenship. But I mean, I would not be going down to the States right now until some climate political climates improve, I would say.
Totally. It's a little hectic. But the Pacific Northwest there is way cheaper for land than the Pacific Northwest in Canada. Mm. And that was kind of blowing my mind. Like I was looking at the Olympic Peninsula just west of Seattle. Gorgeous, like rainforest, looks like Tofino and mountains. And it's like a fraction of the price. And I was like, I think it's because in Canada, our only Pacific Northwest warmer climate is the Lower Mainland and Vancouver Island.
So yeah.
Not very much of it, right? Whereas in the States, like the whole coast of Washington and Oregon is that. So yeah, that might definitely be somewhere I end up long term.
Yeah. I know I would move somewhere if Canada had like a south that was warm, I would move there, but we don't.
No, we just don't have it. So the closest we have is Vancouver.
Yeah. And Victoria. Oh my God. Okay. So when is your poetry book? When are you aiming to have this ready to publish to the peoples?
So my goal, the latest I want it out is May. And it's hard to gauge because it's my first time, but I want to have all my edits implemented in the next 2.5 weeks because I start a full-time job then. So I got to get that done. And then my best friend's illustrating the cover and a few pages of the inside. So that's kind of like not really up to me how long that takes. But then, I'll be laying it out myself, like in Adobe InDesign, kind of the formatting and stuff. So depending how quickly I learn that, then it'll be ready to be printed. So I'm self-publishing it. And I think it'll still take like 3 more months, maybe 4. Just depends how fast these parts of the process can go.
And are you going to create just e-version or like a physical copies as well?
It'll be physical for sure. Okay. So nowadays you can publish a book really easily through like Amazon, KDP, and basically you upload your book online and then it's print on demand. So anyone can order it off Amazon and they print it when it's ordered. So that's a super convenient thing now. And I'm actually deciding not to. Don't know if this is a good decision, but I don't like the idea of not having the book in my hands. And it doesn't make as much sense financially for me to order like 200 books and fill a room with them. But I think I'm going to do that because I want to hold it in my hands, sign them, maybe the first like 200. And I want to like put intention into like the wrapping of them. I'm going to get like a nice little wax seal and like cute little twine and like put dried flowers in it. Like I really like when I was making jewelry, I like making it really special. And there's a disconnect if people are just ordering it off Amazon and I never touch it.
Mm.
So yeah, so I'll just get a printing press to print a whole bunch of them and hope that they sell.
That's a great idea. Well, I'll definitely take one for sure.
Okay, awesome. I was thinking too, I want to put little Polaroid in each one because I have a Polaroid camera and I just think that'd be so fun. Like I love anything that's tangible and real and like whimsical. So yeah, I have a lot of ideas for the packaging.
Well, I think that that's a good idea. And it means a lot more when you get something and it's got that, you know, love, care, and like intention yeah. behind it. It's definitely got a different vibe than just ordering something online. And
totally.
Yeah.
And I might eventually, like, if so many of these are selling that I can't physically keep up with it myself, then I might consider switching, but I'm definitely gonna go this route first and really go for that. I think that's important.
Well, it's a great idea. And yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to reading a copy and owning my own. So yay. So
and proud of your books too.
Yeah. So this has been so much fun. I have totally loved having you on here today. This has been a really fun way of catching up.
It's so awesome. It's my first time on a podcast and it's such a cool way to reconnect with you. And we'll definitely talk more.
Definitely. So where can people find you, Sonia Ringo? Which I like saying your full name because it's the best.
Thank you. So now that I'm back on social media for now, maybe for a while, Poetry and Bones on Instagram, same thing on Facebook, Poetry and Bones also on TikTok. I'm doing little short spoken word TikToks, which has been fun. And then poetryandbones.com. And that's where my book will be for sale on my website.
Awesome. Cool. All right. Well, thank you so much. This has been so much fun. And I feel like I want to just give you a big hug. I know you made my day too. Oh, I just want to squeeze you and make weird creature sounds.
Oh, that'll be so nice one day. We will.
Definitely. Okay. Well, thank you so much. And I hope that you have a wonderful rest of your day. Go see your puppy.
You too.
Bye. Bye. Well, that concludes another episode of the Shanti Ma podcast. I hope you enjoyed today's episode as much as I did. And if you did, please remember to leave a review and subscribe. It helps the show. And I'm just going to keep repeating this over and over and over until I conquer the world. Just kidding. Until next time. Bye.